Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Charles Spence. How are you, Charles?
Very good, thank you.
Excellent. You're the Professor of Psychology up here in Oxford, and we're recording this in your office here.
Tidy office.
lots of empty bottles.
Empty bottles.
Which
experimental
means,
materials.
Yeah, that's the great thing about it, isn't it? I imagine when you decide to start, you're thinking, well, how do I enjoy my product, my job as much as possible? Or I'll study wine.
Oh, yeah. And why aren't more people doing it, you think?
Yeah. Although I did notice you did quite a few studies on crisps.
So crisps.
You like crisps. And actually, crisps is quite interesting because today we want to talk about sound and enjoying products. And we're going to talk a little bit about music, but crisps is one of those things. I have noticed that the packages on crisps are quite crinkly. You know, there's nothing worse than opening a pack of crisps in the movie because everybody's going, shh, because they're crinkly. And in one of your studies, you said that the actual sound preconditions people to enjoy the crisp and freshness.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one of the ones where we do crisps because we're funded to do crisps really rather than because we eat lots of them. Though our undergraduates do like consuming a couple of packets of Pringles at a time in some of our studies. And there, it's kind of a noisy food. Dry foods like breakfast cereals or crisps or biscuits that make a noise, and that it feeds into the flavour experience we get. And we sort of started wondering, why is it that this noisy food, crisps, comes in a noisy packet that wrinkles? And for a while, we thought it must be because of something about the preservation of those bits of potato or potato-like substance in the bag. To keep them longer, you need to have this kind of packaging material. It turns out when we spoke to the packaging engineers, nope, you can have crisps in any sort of packet you want. It doesn't need to be noisy. It was just some marketeer who, back in the 30s, thought, you know, noisy food, noisy package, that would go together well. That might turn us into sort of one of Pavlov's salivating dogs, that when they heard the dinner bell, they started to salivate. Maybe when we hear the wrinkle of the crisp packet opening, we do the same sort of thing. And we've done some experiments here to show that if you're biting into crisps, you'll rate them as crunchier if the packet wrinkle sound is louder. And that's gone all the way through to a couple of years ago in the States. There was a Sunship, which is the loudest bit of packaging, I think, known to mankind and probably ever will be. I've got a couple of bags of it downstairs, somebody sent. Over 100 decibels of noise just when you hold this crisp packet. So loud that consumers said it would grab their attention in the aisle, sure, but so loud that they couldn't hear themselves think, so loud that the company had to go online and offer earplugs. You buy our crisps, you send off the earplugs, put them in, and then you can enjoy the crisps in silence. When that didn't work, the packaging was rapidly withdrawn from the shelves. So I think there's that idea of sort of sonic packaging, the sounds of the pop of the champagne cork, or the twist of the wine bottle, the wrinkle of the crisp packets, those sounds are informative. They set up expectations in our mind. And you sort of think, why aren't more people doing something like a signature sound of opening?
Yeah.
Something like, you may have heard the Snapple pop, that one drink that opens and you hear it, whoop, and you kind of know it's that brand rather than any other. Why aren't we doing the same thing in the world of canned drinks? Why does every canned drink sound the same when it's opened? Why does every wine bottle sound pretty much the same when it's opened? Could you imagine a brand or you hear, just to hear the sound of the bottle opening and you say, okay, I know that's my favourite. You'll hear some of the champagne bottles we've got around here are actually for experiments. They'll be opened next time you come. Well, we're looking very much at what you can tell just from the sound of a wine or a sparkling wine being poured.
Poured, yeah. Because you get that sort of fizzy sound that comes out.
We found that people can actually tell the temperature of the drink from the sound. So even if you blindfold them, play you some wine pouring sounds, and you can tell the temperature of the drink. And now we're looking at ways of changing the sound, perhaps by changing the glassware to emphasise certain notes in the pouring sound. And by doing that, you can actually make a drink sound colder than it is. Or if you're selling tea, make a drink hotter than it is. So I think the sounds, we never think about them, the sound of opening, the sound of pouring of a drink, the sound as it's poured into a particular receptacle or glass.
A decanter for wines.
Yep. But those sounds are informative. Our brain's picking them up all the time, and they're sending subtle cues to us, to our minds, about what we should expect, what we do expect, and then how much we'll enjoy the experience when we come to taste from the glass.
You mentioned quite a few good examples. There's two sounds that I think are very different, and that's the sound of a normal cork being pulled out, and you get that sound, and then you get the sound of a screw cap being opening, which sounds a bit like someone's cracking their knuckles or something along those lines. And one of them, it has a nice, the pop is quite a nice, yep, rich sound. And the other one is almost like, oh, I've just put my neck out, mm-hmm, sort of sound. And do you think that will influence people in terms of, you know, could people learn to enjoy the sound of a screw cap? Or do you think, mm-hmm, maybe they need to re-engineer the screw cap to make it sound, mm-hmm, nicer?
I think all that is possible. On the one hand, I guess the cork sound is wrapped up with a ritual of opening or, mm-hmm, sort of pulling the cork. That you don't have quite as much engagement with the act of opening a screw top, hopefully. He said if somebody who's never had a drink, never seen a bottle of wine, would that one of those two sounds be more inherently pleasant? To the Himber of Cocoland, some of the people we test who have no supermarkets, no schooling, no written language, in rural Namibia, were those sounds perhaps not? Perhaps those sounds come to have meaning through the associations that they have. We know, like Pavlov's dogs, when they heard the dinner bell, it's kind of an arbitrary sound, but I guess they came to like that sound because they knew lunch was coming. And in the same way, it's going to be very hard, I guess, in many countries to dissociate our preconceived notions of what a wine cork means. Does it mean a more expensive wine? Or not, is screw cap cheap? So is that tinny sound something that's inherent in the sound or just inherent in our notions of what comes when that sound is heard? Would be hard to say. But I bet if I brought you into the study and we're doing experiments of this general sort and we give you something to eat or drink and I play the sound of that food or drink being made by a machine or...
Coffee grinder is an example you use.
Yeah, coffee grinder. Or if we just play the sound of opening... of a cork versus a screw cap, and then I give you a glass, you didn't see the bottle or anything, but as soon as you heard that screw cap, all those things are primed in your mind, whatever you think that's associated with, good or bad, and hence that will come to flavour your subsequent experience. And I'm sure you could do things to differentiate, because that sort of screw cap, horrible metallic sound, I mean, there are the packaging manufacturers do have ways now for many sort of metallic packages or sort of wraps for packaging to make them sound different,
yep.
But in many cases they're just waiting for the producers to have the guts to take the step, because it'll be some price, obviously, cost associated with that move.
Mm-hmm.
Is it worth that much? Is a question many are struggling with, but I think it will happen. And we see all the stuff happening in sort of innovative shapes of wine bottles is part of the way. Innovative textures on wine bottles is part of it, and that sound of opening is such a distinctive thing. I mean, we do experiments in the lab where we just have people in front of a virtual shelf of all different sorts of products. And if we just play the pop of the champagne cork, your eyes will be drawn as if by magic to the champagne or the Carver bottles on the shelf, yeah, over the other products. So those sounds mean stuff, and they can be enhanced to be functionally to make the thing experienced as a better tasting product or designed to be signature in that sound is unique to one brand or one vineyard or... one producer.
I know a lot of companies, well, wealthy companies anyway, invested into sounds like I think it was a VW that changed the way their doors shut.
All the car companies do it.
Yeah, they want the door to make a particular sound, mm-hmm, when it shuts because it gives a feeling, yep, of quality.
And more than that, so all the car companies do that. Even for top-end marks, the car is silent to the driver on the interior, but it can't be silent because if you're spending all the money for a BMW or a Mercedes or a Ferrari... you expect it to sound a certain way, and hence they re-engineer that sound back in, and they want to know exactly what sound does our driver want to hear. We'll make it for them. They'll think it's coming from the engine. It's not.
Have we speakers?
Effectively, or they'll adjust the interior of the engine to make that sound transmit the sound that they want, but it could be silent.
Yeah.
The same thing for the car doors. I think VW spend a lot of money on that, and their adverts are playing very much on it. It sounds like a VW, but it's not. But beyond that, the other thing that I've been reading about recently is that it turns out for more regular car purchasers, they do think about the sound of the car door closing. But what they also do is open the car door and just tap the dashboard with the knuckles. That doesn't tell you how good the car is, but they think it does. So a lot of the car manufacturers are thinking very carefully about what the sound of their dashboard, what sound does it make in that one time in your life when you're thinking about, shall I buy this car or that? And you go, on the top of the plastic dashboard. Because if they can get that sound right, again, they can convey notions of quality that will increase the likelihood of purchase.
Okay. So there are some quite important things. And you mentioned about maybe changing the way the glass shape is to change the sound. Obviously, the glass shape is important from a smell and aroma point of view. It's got to have certain shapes to help you funnel the smells into your nose, etc.? Or are you lifting your eyes there? Am I being suckered into something there? Because if you get a wine glass that tapers out, you do find it harder to get the smells than if it tapers in, because that, you know, one's bringing a large amount into a smaller area, so it increases the concentration. One just lets the vapors go away. So,
so you'd think so.
Yeah.
And certainly lots of the wine glass marketeers make an awful lot of money telling you so.
Yep.
And you also think it must be true at some level. And yet a lot of what's said does not seem to be true. Or again, it's a bit like the wine price that we talked about the other week, in as much as if you know that the glass you're holding, if you can see it, if you can feel it, it will change the experience of the wine in the glass.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
But if you do it as kind of the psychologist would do, I'll blindfold you. I'll put the glass on a sort of agitator so that the wine is being kind of moved around the glass to release the volatiles. And I want to put your nose over the top of this glass. It could be glass A, glass B, or glass C. And tell me how intense is the aroma now. When you do it properly, it turns out you cannot tell a difference as a function of changing glass shape.
That's interesting, because I do something with people in tastings where we get a tumbler. Mm-hmm. And we smell wine in an ISO glass, which is a standard wine tasting glass, and we stick it in a tumbler, and the smell just goes. It seriously, from a, you know, and I'm fairly neutral. Mm-hmm. I don't believe a lot of the muck that the glass manufacturers say, but to me it does.
But people can see the glass.
I know, yeah, and so do you think that smell is mainly psychological? That
maybe we should say a large part of it is psychological. Doesn't mean it's not any less real. It doesn't mean it really doesn't smell different in the ISO glass to the tumbler. I believe that's true. But the cause of that difference, the chemist might say it's sort of something about sort of the volatile release and how they're captured in the glass. But my question will be, next time you do it, to see whether if you blindfold people and just let them put their nose over those two glasses, can they still tell the difference? And is it as big? And I bet it'll be smaller. Of course, we actually always drink with our eyes open and we know which glass we have. So the glassware does matter. It matters a lot. But perhaps not necessarily for the reasons we might think. Or that we're sometimes told.
Okay.
And you'll see Peynot talking about, yes, wine glass shape matters because different wine glass shapes funnel the wine differently across the tongue. And I've seen no evidence to say that is actually true.
Yeah, no, I don't necessarily agree with that as well. But there's a guy called Tim Hannah. Have you ever heard of him? He's doing a lot of work on the... He's worth you looking at, actually.
Tim
Hannah. And he's a master of wine, but he's doing a lot of work on the psychology of wine taste and how people's genetics taste and how that runs through and all sorts of stuff. I think you'll find his work really interesting, actually. Mm-hmm. He's from California, but I've done some podcasts. I'll show you where they are. You can have a listen to what I've done in the interviews with him, but you might like that. Let's move on more. I wanted to focus on sound, but we're sort of almost finished the end of the show here. So I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cheers.